Growing the Game with Ballsy is brought to you by a couple of great sponsors. First off, Mako Collision Repair. They've been with me on the ground floor of this thing. They're located at 2337th Avenue in Regina. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go see Alan Mann and Joe Cardiff, two great community-minded guys. They're helping you out in the auto body industry and giving back to your community right here in Regina and Saskatchewan at large. They're big supporters of charity endeavors and kids and that type of stuff. Try to get Alan Mann on this podcast very soon to talk about why he's so big into giving back to the community. Also want to thank Wheel Estate, Canada's most trusted peer-to-peer trailer sharing marketplace. We efficiently connect people who would like to rent a travel trailer with owners whose trailer would otherwise go unused, backing each reservation with our $1 million insurance policy. Go check out their website at wheelestate.ca. And this is the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want it perfect to get it, better get Mako Collision Repair. Go check them out at 2337th Avenue in Regina. This is a segment we hope that will become a regular segment. He's a busy guy, but he'll squeeze us in. It's Paul and Ball on football. And Paul Waldo, the former Alouette and Rough Rider, three-time Grey Cup champ, Regina guy, joining us. He's in the real estate game. Now, first off, before tell the people where they can find you in real estate, how has football helped you in real estate? And I'm not just talking about your popularity, but how have you transitioned and the things you learned in the football field, how has that helped you in real estate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think for a fact that I wouldn't be a successful real estate agent right now if I wasn't a football player, you know, for a lot of reasons. Obviously, the work ethic that it takes, the commitment, being patient, dealing with people, just like you do in the locker room, right? It's not like you're dealing with your best friends all the time. It's a business, and there's a lot of cloud, and there's a lot of negativity, and you find a way to stay optimistic, stay positive, and you go back to your work ethic and the tools that you've used to become successful on the football field, and they're able to translate in the real estate world.
You know, it's a really great point, Paul. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting time because we've said this many times, or I have. You're wearing the same jersey, but you're not exactly teammates because you're fighting for a job. So just talk about being in the locker room right now and what a weird experience that is. Guys coming from different backgrounds. You come from Lobolis. Yep. You're with a guy from Mississippi, uh-huh, and he's maybe, comes from a different family background. Tell me for about sure the weird nature of the locker room right now.
You know what? It's pretty crazy, especially right now, because guys are still vying for jobs. So not only are you on a disconnect with potentially a guy that you have to work with or play with that comes from a completely different world, different part of the world, obviously, and who's experienced a lot different. But once again, you're competing, and I think that's kind of the beauty of it. You start to realize, and we talked about this, on the pregame last week, of how you're always trying to help guys, whether it's a mentorship or whatever you're trying to do to make things easier for the guy that you're competing with, because at the end of the day, you are in that situation. And, to get into a little bit more detail, playing the corner, obviously there was a halfback that was playing inside of me as a guy I had to communicate and talk with on every play, on every snap, whether it was checks or audibles. And in order to do that, I kind of had to get to know who he was, off the field, and kind of establish some sort of rapport, some sort of relationship, so that we were able to trust each other on the field.
You're battling for jobs, and you're the young guy, right? And you're trying to take somebody's job and impress the coaching staff and maybe knock off that old debt. Davis Sanchez would have been one of those guys. Did he treat you like an equal, or at least treat you nicely, or did he kind of keep you at a distance?
He went up and beyond to make me feel comfortable. I remember, getting there and getting ready to run a conditioning test. I had been in Montreal for more than, 6 or 7 hours, and it was our first day testing. And the first thing he did was come over to me and say, "Hey, I'm Davis Sanchez, and I've heard a lot of great things about you, and look forward to playing with you. And as long as you don't take my job." And we kind of laughed about it, but he was the reason why I had the success that I had.
So, Paul, Davis helped you out. Did you take it upon yourself to do the same thing? And if so, do you remember helping out somebody? Who did you help out?
Yeah, I think Matt Webster, young Canadian boy from Queen's University, I believe it was. And, they brought him in 2014, just after the year we won the Grey Cup. And you always say, I know for myself, that was my biggest contract year. obviously winning the Grey Cup at home and hosting and playing a big part of that. You know, they're always trying to bring some guys in. It's known that once a team wins a Grey Cup, it's essentially a rebuild because guys want more money, want to go to different places. And so I knew that obviously that was a kid who would potentially take my job, you know, down the road. But once again, such a great kid, worked hard, has been very successful. You know, he was a guy that just did all the right things. And there's so many players that are out there that are talented, but don't know how to study and stay in the weight room and prepare the way a professional does. And he was a guy that I definitely took under my wing. And it was great to see him win his first Grey Cup this last year in Toronto.
This is the Growing the Game podcast with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako. And this segment is Paul and Ball on football. We're joined by Paul Waldo, and we'll get to his real estate business in a minute. Okay, Paul, so Daron Carter, we keep waiting for him to fail as a corner. But, I mean, last game in the preseason, he drops the hammer, two big hits, and he looks like he really enjoys doing that. And I tell you what, he's ultra-talented. I don't know if this will work over the course of the year, but it's interesting, isn't it?
It really is, because he's just one of those guys that it doesn't matter where you put him, he finds a way to make plays. And like I said, I was the biggest skeptic from him going on to the defensive side. And I think I had told you, I was like, there's no way you can just go over there and then start playing. And even if he's athletic, you know, he's not physical, and he is proven differently. And we talked about him arguably being the best athlete to ever put on a Rider uniform. And I mean, it's hard to dispute that when you have a guy that can play both ways. Now, you know, can he do it consistently? Probably not. And it'll just, I guess, maybe just depend on what the injury situation is like and what their matchups are like. But he's a guy that's physical. He's athletic. He can run. And God, it's so impressive.
Certainly an X factor, isn't he? He's a guy that if you do run into some injury problems and you need to use him exclusively as a defensive back, you've got a receiving core that can make up for it, right? Even though he's the best or one of the best in the league at that position.
And you bring up a great point, Ballsy, probably the most important point. If that receiving core was lacking and, you know, they didn't have a lot of offensive production, then you just, no matter how good Daron Carter is on the defensive side of the ball, you just can't afford to lose him on the offensive side. But you go back to that receiving core with obviously guys like Bakari Grant and Naaman. You got Chad Owens and Caleb Hawley. I mean, there just isn't enough room for all those great players. And obviously with guys like Robbie Begg that are out there, they can afford to put him over there when they need him. And so it's pretty amazing. They've done a good job, and it's going to be an exciting year.
And now they got a bit of a break here. Now, do you like this new training camp setup? Because normally you go 2 weeks, then play, and then play. They played, then they get a break. Their green and white game. They go to Humboldt, which is going to be a great gesture, and then they're right back at it, getting ready for the final preseason game against Calgary. Do you like that setup better? I ask you this because, you know, let's use you as an example. Paul Waldo, we want to see this Waldo kid. We think he's got what it takes. We've got to see him in a game situation. Oh, wait, we've gone 2 weeks. He pulled a hammy. He can't play. At least here now, you get to see these guys right away in a game.
You are absolutely correct. I think, you know, from both a coaching standpoint and a playing standpoint, you kind of get lethargic just waiting 2 weeks to finally put the pads on, and guys are frustrated, guys are hurt, guys are banged up, guys are tired, they're sore, and they just finally want to play where it matters. You'll hear that a lot amongst the players. God, I just want to play when it counts. And now, you know, within the first 5 days, there's a build-up to training camp, and you can actually see a light at the end of the tunnel because that's game day when you strap up. And you know, it's not like you get hurt in the first 2 days and they send you packing like what normally happens very often.
Yeah, okay. So one of the things I'm looking forward to in the last week and as we ramp up to the last preseason game is our Canadian content. It wasn't that long ago where the Riders were struggling in that aspect. And you know, Canadians and quarterbacks win in this league, okay? And one of the battles is at that linebacking spot. You got Judge, who really was the judge, jury, and executioner against the Eskimos, right? You got Hurl. Those two are probably locks. Then you got Tights, who was a high draft pick. He probably makes the team. You got Dylan Grondin and Chevrier battling. We can't forget about Francis. Like, there's going to be some interesting battles, especially on the defensive side of the ball in terms of Canadians.
Absolutely, and I think you got Gagne too as well. So you got a lot of players there. And I think what they've done is they haven't unturned any stone, I guess, right? You always talk about making sure you look under every rock to do everything you can to put yourself in the best position. And, you know, you have a guy like, you know, Sam Hurl, who's got the most experience, started, you know, I would think at least a few dozen games in this league as a linebacker, as a mid linebacker, as a starter. Did it obviously last year. I think he started 12 or 13 games. Then you got a guy like Cameron Judge, who's not as experienced, but he's probably got the most juice out of him, right? He's the youngest there, coming from a big D1 school, a captain, a former player who just looks like he flies around. Kevin Francis is kind of probably the guy in between who's shown some signs. And then you got those young guys, a guy like Grondon, who I know has been busting his butt off. So you need the depth to start with the guy there. And I think they're going to do a pretty good job of finding a guy there. And not only that, but what you've done with obviously Zach Evans and guys like Mac Henry inside, it's going to make it a lot easier for that second level.
And let me ask you, so Jerome Messam, we both like him. We think he's a good back. I think you said he doesn't get the props he deserves.
Yeah, for sure.
But let me ask you this. Thigpen looked really good. And Thigpen's a guy that when he comes back after a two-game suspension will be flying there at 32. I really love the way he plays. He's an eager beaver out there. Zach Stacy looked pretty good. They brought in Trey Mason, another former St. Louis Ram this week. And you've got Messam there. Could Messam maybe be in a bit of trouble, or will his birth certificate save him?
You know what? It's interesting you say that. I think Chris Jones had alluded to, if I'm not mistaken, last week about, you know, if starting a non-importer national back, or I guess at any position, you got to make sure that you have somebody to back him up, right, to not affect the ratio. And so that'll be interesting how all that plays out. Obviously, with the assurance of a guy like Mac Henry, who people are saying has shown that he could probably be a full-time starter on the interior defensive line, might make Jerome maybe a little bit more expendable, I guess, in that situation, depending on what they want to do from a ratio standpoint. Does Jerome Messam make that team? Of course he does. And I think he definitely needs to touch the ball, because I think he's a true X factor, and I think he's a true difference maker. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how it all plays out. There's always a surprise somewhere along the line, but to me, I don't think there's a better all-around back that can do the things that he can do in this league. So it'll be interesting to see the way they play it out.
You know, Lowther hits four field goals and all of a sudden Kirpini is not hurt anymore. You said that on our broadcast. He's back this week. Now, I'm not suggesting he was sandbagging. I don't know why he was out. Maybe he was injured, or maybe it was just kind of you know how they like to fudge the numbers with the training camp. But there's an interesting situation heating up there. What I wanted to ask you is, how many times did you go to training camp and you knew guys were sandbagging it?
Oh God! There's always guys, you know, and it's sometimes it's not even the game that it takes. There'll be just a practice where somebody goes and has three or four interceptions, or has a couple of big catches, or something, you know, crazy happens, and all of a sudden guys are back and ready. And I think that is the one thing that you can't, I guess, try to look past as an athlete. Everybody has started as a backup for the most part, right? You know, whether it's Brett Favre or you want to name it, somebody had to go down in order for them to get their opportunity. And, you know, whether it's an injury situation.
Tom Brady.
Not all, there you go, right? So I don't ever think your job is safe, and I think everybody's expendable, with perhaps the exception of the guy that you just mentioned, maybe Tom Brady, you know, in this league, in any league in football. So it happens often, I think. And, you know, a guy like Tyler Kapinia, though, he's a competitor. He's a tough kid, from what I knew. I had a chance to play with him really briefly there. And I just think he's a guy that was probably hurt, or maybe they had wanted to rest him. You know, maybe he was a little sore, a little dinged up, and they wanted to give the young kid a shot, and he went out there and made the absolute most of his opportunity.
All right, so if they want to get in the real estate game, who do you work for, and how can they get a hold of you?
I work with the Home Expert team with Royal LePage here in Regina, and, you know, my number is 306-502-5355, paul@homesregina.ca, just the way it sounds. You can jump on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, social media sites, at the Home Expert team, and get a hold of me there.
And they can hear you and tell you're a real personable guy. And I know you as an honest guy, but if you're trying to sell me on why I should hire you, why should they hire Paul Waldo to sell their house?
You just said it. I'm an honest guy. I'm there to do what's best for my clients. I'm not going to rush you. I'm not going to push you. I'm not, you know, I mean, every situation is different and people are different. I do a pretty good job of, like I said, building a relationship with people, because at the end of the day, every situation is different. So it's not just a matter of trying to get you to buy a house or get you to sell your house and offload it. It's making sure that do the best I can to take care of your situation.
And I'm sure you wouldn't mind throwing in a little side special CFL story for somebody if they wanted to ask you about Calvillo or something like that.
Oh, absolutely. We can talk for days. I do it anyways. You know what I mean? So why not? A lot of years. I played with a lot of good players and a lot of good memories. So I'm always open to chat.
Love you, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
I love you too. Thanks, Balls. You can't wait.
All right, in conversation with Seahawks punter John Ryan. How are you, John?
No, I'm doing great.
That's good, man. Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things. You're coming to town for your Gear Up for John Ryan Foundation event. Tell us about it.
Yeah, another year of golf tournament in Regina on the 28th. It's a Thursday. It's at the Regina Golf and Country Club, the Royal Regina. And once again, we're just raising money to help the Mighty Mites division and the RMF, you know, help players have good, proper equipment and also educate the coaches on concussion safety and awareness.
Yeah, you know what, and we talk about it as the years go by and they change the game and try to make it more safe. It's really imperative we have the coaching and the proper equipment. I know I've asked you this before, but I forgot what you said. Well, who's one minor coach that really jumps off the map at you? Because I really believe that minor coaches, it's not about wins and losses. It's about holding the kids' interest and getting them to play at the next level.
Yeah, for me, it was a guy in Regina named Terry Demtra. He coached me with the previous Steelers for a few years, and he was just he really made football fun, and we were 10, 11, 12 years old, but he treated us like young men, and it was a lot of fun to play for him.
John, so now you're also coming to Regina, and you're going to be a part of the Queen City Pride Parade. Tell me about that. You're the Grand Marshal, as it were.
I am, yes. My wife and I are going to be there for the weekend at the Pride Parade. It was just an honor that they would ask me to do it, and I jumped at the opportunity when they asked me.
This is very important to you. I know you're big in sticking up for the lesbian and gay community. With some trolls, you were big against them. Supposed Seahawk fans. Just how important is it for you to be involved in this situation?
I think it's important. As I said, I was honored they asked me, and I'd like to bring up give kids out there that are growing up and they are happen to be gay that they can go on in football. I've seen it now. A guy named Michael Sams was drafted a few years back, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised the reception that he got in NFL locker rooms, the way that they were talking about him. I think there's still a long ways to go. I think there's still a lot of stereotypes out there, but I think that young kids coming up to the system that they're going to be have the opportunity to play football at the highest level, play sports at the highest level.
I think we were naive for years to think that there were no gay people in locker rooms, right?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't believe there's any openly gay men in the NFL right now, but, I think that there's definitely gay people in the NFL for sure.
Do you find that it'd be more accepting in a locker room nowadays if a guy did come out and say, hey, I'm an openly gay football player like Michael Sams did?
I think so. I hope so. I think there are still some hurdles to get over. There's still some people that, a little bit behind in their thinking. But, I think that, in most cases, they'd be welcome with open arms. In the NFL, it's all about winning. If you can help a team win, you're going to be welcome.
John Ryan joining us here, just a couple more seconds with him. Now, John, a lot of people were talking around here, big John Ryan fans and just NFL fans. Their eyebrows were raised when the Seahawks drafted a punter. Where does that leave you? Where's John Ryan's future right now?
Who knows? I think going back to college, working my butt off and going on the field every day and punting well. Beyond that, I really don't have any control. I'd be lying to you if I said I was a little bit worried about it, but at the same time, it's really the only thing I can do. And I've come through a lot of things in my life that I had to get over, and I only kind of know one way to get out of those problems, and that's just by putting my head down and working. So I'm just going to treat this the exact same way, this adversity, and work my butt off and see what happens.
So what are you now, 35?
36.
Okay, 36 years old, John. What was your, you know, when you got into this and you got your feet wet, you know, Bombers, Green Bay, Seattle. What was your ultimate goal? How long did you want to kick for? What was kind of the, you know, the earmark for you?
I think the ultimate goal was 10 years. You know, that would be, you know, a good run for sure. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough now to be, you know, going into my 15th year. You know, and now I kind of, at this point now, you know, I don't want it to be over. You know, I'd love to play for two more years, but we'll just have to kind of see what happens. But, you know, as I said, I'm just beyond anything I could have dreamt of. So everything from here on out is kind of icing on the cake.
How are you health-wise, John?
I feel great. Yeah, I feel, you know, just as strong as I've ever been. Obviously, at this point in my career, doing it as long as I have, there's some, you know, small nagging injuries, but nothing that that affects my day-to-day performance.
Have you ever done the math how many balls you've kicked in your life?
Every once in a while, like, that comes up. You know, the number of the punch you had, so the guys is kind of talking about it in the locker room. We try to kind of add it up. I really, honestly, I don't quite know. You know, I would then should be somewhere in the half million to maybe 600,000 area.
Yeah, John, how is this John Ryan? You know, how do you train differently than younger John Ryan? Has your training regimen changed at all? Because you've always been, you know, people think of kickers, they look a certain way, they are a certain way. You are a specimen, and you've always been a great athlete. But do you train a little differently now, 15 years in the league?
You know, not as much as you might think. You know, I think everyone says, you know, you got to train smarter, not harder when you get older. But I like to train hard. You know, if this offseason, I definitely put in more hours in the weight room, more hours working out than I ever have before. And I'm always not considered myself a worker. So, you know, I would like to say that I'm working out a little bit smarter, but at the same time, I'm probably working out harder than ever. So there hasn't been a ton of change.
You know, when you sign this deal with the Seahawks, because you're a business guy too, you got an ownership in a baseball team. When you sign this deal with the Seahawks, did you kind of look at the numbers and say, hey, at this age, I'm going to be, you know, I'll be making this much, and that's when maybe the business side of football will really kick in? Did you kind of, you know, you're not going to be blindsided by anything, obviously.
No, I've been very fortunate to make a living and, you know, set aside enough money to really not have to worry for hopefully the rest of my life, unless I live to be, you know, older than I want to be, actually. But, you know, I've been relatively smart with my money, and, you know, I've been, you know, very fortunate to, you know, be paid more than anyone deserves to.
You know, I always love your down-to-earth mentality. So, yeah, how old do you want to live, John?
I don't know. We'll see.
you still want to be able to do things with your lovely wife. That's what you're, I think that's what you're getting at, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. Okay. And lastly, John, I know you have a love for baseball. So when this is done, when sports is done in terms of playing career, is that something you want to explore, like get more into the baseball side of things, or what do you want to do after football?
Yeah, that's kind of the first reaction I have. I want to probably going to happen. You know, I've owned part of the Portland Pickles for 2 years now, and I think I'll dive a little more headfirst into that and really, you know, spend more time in Portland than I do now, and kind of really just educate myself on the business side and really get my feet wet with that. And, you know, kind of see where it goes from there.
Okay, lastly, just to wrap this thing up, let's reiterate again. You've got your golf tournament, and your wife also has a comedy show here. Just fill all the folks in how they can go see this and how they can get tickets.
Yeah, there's a comedy night with her and two other comics from L.A., and that's going to be on the Wednesday night before the golf tournament on the 27th, and tickets are available at Casino Regina at box office and online.
All right, John, thanks for this. We appreciate it, and whatever the future holds, I'm sure you're going to tackle it successfully. Thanks for this.
All right, thank you.
It's the Growing the Game podcast brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair. And we are joined on the phone by Mike Thomas from Football Saskatchewan. Mike, first off, the Senior Bowl won by the South in a lopsided fashion. And I don't really want to dwell on the score. Let's talk about the experience actually playing in Yorkton, somewhere different for a change, not Regina and Saskatoon. How did that go over?
You know what? It was a great weekend, Ballsy, as the kids had an opportunity for some of them their first time to go up to the Garlic Curtain up in Yorkton. And the community was a great host for us as we were able to be at a hotel not too far away. The high school was great for us in terms of their facilities. A lot of the minor programs in the province have some top-notch facilities, and I'll put Yorkton up there with some of the ones that we've got in Regina and Saskatoon as well. So, you know, overall, in terms of the game experience, you know, I think regardless of the score, it was something that would be a memorable moment for a lot of these players, that for some it was their last high school game ever, or potentially the last football game ever. And for some, a lot of which of the players are going to be playing post-secondary. But overall, it was a great time and something that I think we're going to add into our rotation at Senior Bowls for years to come, just based off of how things went this past weekend.
And pretty cool to play like on an old school grass/dirt field, kind of like back in the day, you know, before Liable Field was Liable Field, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, when you look back at that and you go, a lot of these kids nowadays are so used to turf and all this other stuff that grass might be somewhat of a dinosaur, an anomaly type thing for them. So, you know, it was something that for a lot of them, they really enjoyed. It was softer on the joints and stuff. And just even, like you say, heading back to your childhood roots, because when we all started playing football at some point in time, it was in a park or somewhere that was a grass field. You know, not too many of us had an opportunity to grow up on an artificial field. So, you know, they definitely, you know, it's the first cut of the year for them and stuff. And it was super awesome. And, you know, we were super happy to be there. And they were great this past weekend. And I think the kids all came away with some great memories overall.
One of the guys playing his last high school game he'll excel with the Thunder is Jordan Hofford, quarterback from Winston. He set a game record with 5 touchdown passes.
Yeah, Jordan Hofford had a great game, you know, and he definitely had, I would say, probably the most talented receiving core that I think there might have been in Senior Bowl history, with the amount of players that are going on to post-secondary programs that started at Football Canada Cups. Just their size, their height, their speed. It was definitely something that was on display in Yorkton, as you saw jump balls to Deshaun LeJour, big passes to Dallin Keene, Ben Ekstusic making some massive plays, Tyler Lalonde running tunnel screens, Ethan Douglas, a product heading to the Regina Thunder, that was out there running some plays as well, too, caught a touchdown pass in that game. You know, it was really something to have an eye on, and Jordan himself showing that, you know, he is deserving to be in the conversation with some of the graduating grade 12 football quarterbacks here in the province to make a name for himself when he moves on to the Thunder this fall.
Now, I know he's talking to some people, actually he's talking to Jeff Stusek last week on the podcast here, and we talked about the South being pretty good at most positions ahead of the North, except for maybe on the lines where the bigger guys, you know, they're excelling in the North. Why do you think that is? Why does the South seem to be a little bit ahead of the North? Is it a cyclical thing, Mike?
You know, I think really when it comes down to it, you know, in the northern part of the province, there are more rural programs where you do have a lot of kids who are, you know, obviously your big farm kids is what they always say about Saskatchewan players sometimes. But I do think the one benefactor for a lot of the players' development here in the province, in the southern half, and specifically Regina and area, has been the work of Regina Minor Football and their Spring League, which is essentially, for a lot of kids, given them an extra season and a half of football over the years that they've been able to play for 3 years. When you take into consideration all the different practices and game reps that they get, that does help, and it does show, especially when you look at players that are developed from Regina and area compared to the North. So whereas in from the line play, it is what it is. You know, you can't teach size. You can teach speed and all that stuff, but, you know, you just sometimes may not have some of those bigger kids down in the South. But, you know, overall, you know, in the province, regardless if they're from Regina or they're from Saskatoon or from the rural area, they're going to be a tough Saskatchewan kid no matter what. And teams across the country are going to be clamoring for them to come to their programs all over the country.
Yeah, for sure. Mike Thomas joining us from Football Saskatchewan. With that in mind, talking Northern football in Melfort, you got a developmental camp coming up here right away. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so our PDC's camp, our player developmental camps, are ones that are built off of our old skill ID camp process. And it's one that is an opportunity for players to develop themselves within their different positions, learn a little bit more, and have some great coaching, as we'll have coaches from U of S and from the Saskatoon Hilltops that will be attending that camp and be coaching at that camp. And for a lot of kids, it's an opportunity, perhaps in those younger grades, 9s and 10s, that are getting their first exposure to the game, to get a little bit more tutelage, to be able to get themselves to be a little bit better than when they were, you know, a couple of days prior to the camp, obviously. So, you know, it's a great program that we've been able to run this year, and it's been well received across the province and all the locations we were at.
So I'm trying to beat back father time. I've gotten into jogging once again, and I've jogged in Lake Ridge past Mike Thomas running a practice for the Vikings. What age group is that for flag football? And tell me about some of the kids on that team you can maybe highlight.
Yeah, so, you know, we did see a jog by. I don't know if you call that jogging or more walking, but we did see a go by.
Oh, wow. This might be the last time you're on this podcast.
But you know what? In general, you know, we've got kids who are 9 turning 10 and 10 turning 11. And, you know, it's obviously a treat for myself as I get a chance to coach my daughter. And she's out there, you know, playing and competing with some of her classmates and some of the kids that attend a neighboring school in George Lee. So, you know, the great thing about it is, you know, with all these kids that are out there playing, it's more about being active, you know, giving them an opportunity to play a sport. As we're talking right now, I'm at the Regina Girls High School flag games here at the rugby field and the Touch Regina field. And it's just showing an opportunity for these kids to play the sport where they may not have had that opportunity before. So, you know, from our level, there's so many different kids that are playing that are, haven't had the opportunity. Some with disabilities, that this is the first time they're able to play a team sport. You know, some kids obviously playing with their classmates, some people making new friends. So, you know, the game is growing, you know, and with your segment, Growing the Game, that's exactly what football is it's doing that exactly at the moment, growing it in so many different demographics and parts across the province.
What I find cool, too, is a lot of the kids that I coach now, the Travis Hortons, the Alex Varsianis, those kind of guys of the world, they're reffing. They've gone from playing to reffing to playing.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely one of the neatest things when you're able to see, as you mentioned, like, you know, some players that you've had coach, you've coached them, and they're now giving back to the sport even at a young age. You know, some of the guys are reffing, some guys are coaching. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some students that are in grade 10 and 11 and 12. That are coaching. Some are coaching their younger brother, or some are coaching in the community. Some are wanting to be a teacher and wanting to use this as an experience to be able to get into education or to help their resume down the road. So all of those players are committed, as well as we've got players from the Regina Rams, University of Regina Rams, and from the Regina Thunder that coach, and even some that attend the University of Saskatchewan, and also, you know, SAS Polytech. So, you know, it's great when we have all these young individuals giving back, especially in a province like Saskatchewan, where volunteerism is probably second to none in the country. And these individuals are doing a great job of it here from such a young age.
Yeah, you know, it's cool you bring that up, because Jordan Hofford, who I talked about, I coached him for 3 years in flag football. He calls me up. He goes, "Hey, coach, you got give me some drills, and how big's the field?" He's like, I'm coaching you. And then Daryl Puskas, who coached me in high school, his kids are actually coaching my nephew's team, and they have no skin in the game. They have no kids. They're just coaching kids they don't know. So I think that's really cool. Good community involvement.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's actually great, because there's a couple of kids even that are on a part of our provincial team, Jaden Janata and Ethan Jaster, I think from O'Neill, that are in the process of making the team. And they were talking a little bit of smack to me the other day, because we played them game one.
Yeah.
So I said to them, I said, "Hey, you know what, boys, if you guys win game one, I'll make your job a little bit easier on making the provincial team." Well, they didn't win, so they had to make it the hard way.
Yeah,
so
that's good. Hey, and lastly, Mike, did you ever think back in the day, what was it, 11 years ago when you started this thing, and I think there were like 75 kids, that it would grow to well over 2,000?
No. You know, I really, really am truly blessed, and, you know, and we're definitely honored to be able to have received the amount of support that we have from the community in Regina and area, to be recognized from the NFL in regards to having two NFL Play 60 events in the last couple of years, to sprouting a girls' high school flag program that I'm standing here watching, that hopefully one day my daughter will be a part of, to starting a mini flag program for kids 3, 4, 5, where one of the coaches, Darcy Olenek, who's a coach on the Regina Thunder, he coaches his twin boys on there, and you see other people out there being a part of this, and working with Brendan Bennett, who's my technical director of Football Sask, and starting an adult flag league, where we've probably got between all of these different programs, you're looking at over 3,600 people playing in the city of Regina. So, it's definitely, I would never imagine this in my wildest dreams, but am I ever proud of Regina and area and the kids, parents, players of being a part of this, because this is football. The Riders are huge, and this is just an extension of it running right down to grassroots across the province.
What's your daughter's name?
Taya Thomas.
Okay, Taya Thomas. She obviously didn't pick up any moves from me and my walk shuffle by your practice field, but does she have dad's Mike Thomas's slick moves or what?
Well, you know what? I will say she does. She's actually, I will say this, Ballsy, that she is a better player than I ever was at that age. And, mom and dad are super proud all the time, as she's a big track star too, and has done very well in that level, and loves football and loves playing and loves competing. So, when she has to choose between football and something else, regardless of what it may be, if it's something of more favorable for her, football usually comes first. So daddy's proud, mom loves it, and it's definitely something that we're all happy to be a part of in our family.
Hey, by the way, I played on the Rams and I wore number 10 and you wore number 9, so that must mean I'm a little better than you.
No, I wouldn't say that, because I'll tell you what, I did wear 10 for a portion of my time there, but then when I got injured, I wanted to get rid of all the badness that may have came with the number, so I switched to 9.
Okay,
so.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Anyways, hey, thanks for this, buddy, and all the good work you do.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on the show, Ballsy. Much appreciated, and I'll see you walking, running around the park in the next little bit.
I'm doing my best Nick Lewis impersonation. See you later, buddy. Take care.
All right, see you later. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect, again, better get Mako Collision Repair and Real Estate. Okay, so Jason Shen, Borderland Co-op. How are you today, my friend?
I am doing great. How about yourself?
Good, man. Big day down there in the Mooseman area yesterday. Tell us about it.
Yes, we had the very first midget girls tackle football game that has ever taken place in the province.
So what a proud moment that was, I bet.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was great to have that game happen. Hopefully it's the start of many more to come.
So tell us about the game. Who played in the game?
Well, it was our Mooseman Generals versus the Melville Vipers, their minor program there.
All right, so that was, is that Svensson's program there in Melville?
You bet it is. Yes,
All right, so let's just talk about the growth of football, female football, in those two communities. How big was your roster?
We've got about 33 on our roster altogether, and I think Johnny is somewhere in that same neighborhood.
That's awesome. So in terms of the game and in terms of growing the game, how did you go about growing the game of women's football down there?
Well, basically it just came out of recruiting for our regular programs. We're trying to get more players involved, and it didn't matter to me whether it was male or female players. We needed more players to keep growing our program. And I ran into a hurdle an awful lot of girls saying that they didn't want to play with the boys, that they were concerned and about getting hurt and that kind of thing. And, we had about 10% of our program that was female already that had zero problem playing, but we couldn't get over that hump to get them to play that program. So when you start talking to enough of them and you start getting, 10, 15, 20, 25 of them that are saying, I am concerned, and they won't come out, well, that's enough to create a whole nother team and a whole nother program. So let's do it. Let's see if we can get them interested, and maybe they'll move to the full program after this, or maybe we keep rolling with women's football and keep trying to grow that game.
So forgive me, did you say John Svensson's program in Melville had about the same numbers as you, a pretty similar roster?
Pretty similar, yeah. I think they were in that 27 to 30 kind of roster in there, yeah.
So have the Riot or the Valkyries or women's football at that level helped you guys develop the program down there?
Absolutely. They've been immensely supportive. We've had the Riot out to help us with a camp, and I think they did the same for Melville as well. And we've had the opportunity to go to Winnipeg and participate in a controlled scrimmage with one of their midget girls teams from their programs out there. and we were the guests of the Manitoba Fearless for a game there where they were playing the Riot, and had an opportunity to have a Q&A session with the Riot the next day. And, you know, the Valkyries were in Winnipeg at the same time, so they made time to stop by and see our girls as well. And it was a great weekend for them all around. Like, all those women's CFL, Western Women's CFL teams have been very, very supportive.
So was the community behind this? Or did you get a good crowd last night?
Yes. Yeah, the Melville fans came out. Our fans came out. It was the full house out there. It was awesome.
Why do you think girls like football?
I don't know.
Do you think it's the same for, you know, as for guys, the camaraderie, the team aspect, the goals, the discipline, all that type of stuff?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the same of that. You know, like, I think a lot of them come into it for different reasons. Some come in for the team aspect, the recreation aspect. Some come for fitness. Some come for the competitive nature, you know, and some as a combination of it all. Like, there's some really competitive players that we have on our team, and obviously the same with John's team. They have some very competitive players as well, and, you know, it makes for good football.
So you're the defensive coordinator, right?
That's right, yeah.
How'd your defense do?
They were pretty lights out. They played very well. Our offense is a little bit weaker. Like, most of our multi-year players that have been playing with our regular programs are defensive players. So we were fairly strong there. I don't know, I guess there'd be about 103 plays in the game, and I think my defense was on for about 80 of them. So they only let up 4 scores, and they ended up getting a defensive touchdown. So I'm really proud of my defense. They did really, really well to keep us in the game.
What was the score in the game? What was the final score?
28-12 is how it ended with for Melville.
Okay, so scores mean nothing. I just wanted to throw that out there because we do have a scoreboard. But what, you know, talk about Jason Chen here, Borderland Co-op and Mooseman. We call him the football godfather down there. He does everything. Jason, so what's the goal? Take wins and losses aside, what are you hoping for this year with the program and going forward?
Well, we're achieving exactly what we want. We want girls to be playing. We want to be able to spread the word and get more girls playing, you know, get other communities around us and across the province to start their own programs, you know, start building a provincial league. Let's get this going on a provincial level, and then hopefully we keep building that across the Prairie provinces to get a real solid Western Canadian contingent, and then hopefully build it to national so that we can really become fierce competitors Canadian-wide in the international competition.
Okay, forgive me, bud. Is it 6, 9, a full 12 woman-on-woman football? What were we playing there last night?
Last night we were playing 9-a-side. And that's a little bit of what the challenge is. As you look across the national landscape, there's a lot of programs that do exist out there, out east, and also in Manitoba that play 6-a-side. So there's going to be some work along the way where we'll have to find a way to standardize what everybody's going to play. And numbers are a big dictator in that. So, you know, it may become that it starts at 6-a-side if we start going provincial or something like that, and until we can wrap it up to 9. But we've been very fortunate with John's team and ours that we were able to have enough players to be able to go full 9 right away. And, you know, hopefully there's potential to go to 12 in the future.
Jason Chen joining us here on Growing the Game with Ballsy as we're trying to grow the game, and we're talking female football here. So overall, were the girls on both sides pretty happy with the outcome, the support, the experience?
They were, yeah. You know, we lost the game, but, you know, and our competitors, they're not happy with that. Nobody likes to lose. But, you know, after the game, we talked to them and said, hey, it was a tough competitive game. And we asked who wants to quit football after this, and not one hand went up. They're preparing for the rematch on Monday. So, yeah. You know, they know how it is. You know, there's wins and there's losses, and you win, you learn from both of those things, and you just got to keep moving forward.
Two more quick questions for you. So, yeah, you got Melville's program, you got your program, but where, like, how do you keep it from going stale? Like, you're playing a rematch, but what do you got in terms of games going forward, or how do you grow this thing going forward?
Well, for us, I think a little bit of this is trying to work with the Manitoba Midget League and try and get some exhibition-type games going with them, just so you can face some different players every now and again. And really, like, over the next months here and winter, it's going to be about reaching out to other programs and trying to encourage them to, you know, to start this. Like, there's programs out there that have girls flag football that are very successful. You know, I would think that within that contingent of girls playing flag that there would be some that would be able to turn around and join the midget tackle ranks and start the new teams. one of the big things that's going to have to come with this is some support from, I don't know where it needs to come from specifically, but there needs to be some opportunity for some grants and things like that so some of these other teams out there can actually get the equipment they need. We're very fortunate that we have a very strong sponsorship group and lots of commitment from our local business group that we can get the equipment we need and we can make decisions to do what we need to do on our own. But it would sure be nice to help. It would probably be helpful to other programs out there to be able to have some financial assistance to be able to get the gear they need to start these programs.
Okay, Jason, I guess I'll two more quick questions. First one, what did you think of the caliber? You've been coaching boys and you've been around football, watching it and coaching it and been involved organizing. What did you think of the caliber?
You know, it was pretty darn good. They were both very competitive teams and they both played very hard. There was some hard contact out there, some great tackling. You know, it's game one. You know, so there's lots of things that both teams need to work on to keep building upon to raise the caliber. But, you know, for first game for the first teams, I got to say that it was pretty dang good.
All right, so you're kind of the template maybe going forward. So we just talked about trying to grow this thing, and if somebody's interested and somebody stumbles across this podcast as it gains popularity and they want to, you know, maybe start up a program in their community, how can they get a hold of you to maybe talk and pick your brain and work together going forward?
Well, I'm easy to get at via email, moosemangenerals@gmail.com. That's the easiest way to find me.
Mm-hmm.
And, going through our website, generalsfootball.ca, find info on us. All our contact info is on that website. I'm more than happy to lend a hand to help any program start setting the seeds.
Jason, thanks for this. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Wally.
And that will bring a close to this episode of Growing the Game with Ballsy, our 33rd. Can you believe it? We made it to 33. We continue to roll along with our fine sponsors, which include Mako Collision Repair. If you've had an uh-oh and want a perfect again, better get Mako Collision Repair in Regina at 2330 7th Avenue. Also, Wheel Estate. Yes, Wheel Estate is Canada's most trusted peer-to-peer trailer sharing marketplace, efficiently connecting people who would like to rent a travel trailer with owners whose trailer would otherwise go unused, backing each reservation with their $1 million insurance policy. Check them out at wheelestate.ca. Yeah, the great sponsors help us keep churning out the stories here in Saskatchewan. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast and get your name out there and help grow the game of football, you can email me mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. You can also do that to help me pursue any Saskatchewan football stories or football stories with ties to Saskatchewan, as that's what we're trying to do here, grow the great game of football in Saskatchewan. We'll talk to you next week.